All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Today, I have special guest Blake Fishbeck. Blake, thank you so much for taking the time out of your, I guess, day before Thanksgiving now to join me today. Really appreciate
Yeah, no, thank you for having me, Vic. I mean, this is my second ever podcast, so it seems I'm getting up in the ranks. But no, I'm super happy to be here, especially with someone like you. I feel like we're gonna have some good conversation today.
I think it'll be a good time. Do you mind sharing with the audience and I guess just me too, your first podcast experience and who that was with, how that was?
Yeah, so my first podcast experience was more in like the comedy realm, I guess, or I guess we try to aim it that way. But that was with Michael Sides and Hayden Monroe. And we just had a bunch of topics. The main topic of that podcast was pet peeves. And I had some pretty good ones that I brought to the table. And I don't want to spoil that content. So if you want to go listen to that and see what kind of jokes that I had, I would go ask Michael and Hayden about it. Yeah, it was a pretty good time. But with whatever we're focused on today, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, today it's pretty much all, it's going to be all about you. I just plan on asking different questions about your experience, I guess, in college, high school, early days. So I guess to kind of just to kickstart everything, how did you end up at A&M?
Right, that's a really good question. So I think back in high school, I was kind of split on where I wanted to go. When I was visiting campuses, I only really visited two, and that was UT and A&M. It was either going to be one of those places, and people in my family were only ever at A&M, so that's kind of all I knew. So when I went to UT, I was just going to expect it to be like the only school that I visit, so I don't only visit one school, A&M. But I got to UT and I absolutely fell in love with the campus and I fell in love with all the people I saw there and just like the diverse environment that UT's campus had. That was really a big pull for me. And it was a really hard decision. It was really 50-50 for me. But at the end of the day, one bad semester in high school, I went from top 6.9% of my class to 7.1% because I moved one spot from like 42 to 43, I think, or like
Wow.
something like that in my class. And that got me away from automatic admissions. And then I never even got into the chemical engineering program at UT. So it made the decision really easy for A&M. But either way, I think I would have found a home, and I'm happy I'm here because I found so many amazing people that have pushed me further. But yeah.
Why UT and A&M in particular, like in particular, was it family or was it just like the two big schools that everyone was talking about?
Just in terms of, I wanted to stay in Texas. All of my family is here. I'm very fortunate to have all my family in one place in Houston. So staying close to home, close to family is always important. And then I just know A&M and UT both had amazing engineering programs that are critically acclaimed and produce so many success stories, and I feel like would develop me into such a better person and engineer as a whole. But I think kind of one of the main reasons too is like at that time I never really thought of other schools, and it was just such an easier decision to keep it between two. And like the value that you get for going to these in-state schools here is insane. Instead of even if I wanted to shoot higher for some out-of-state very prestigious school, the debt you can take on is kind of insane. So that was also an incentive, was just to stay here, stay with family, keep it cheaper. And I think the bang for the buck is like no other in terms of engineering at these two schools.
I definitely agree. When I was applying to college, like different colleges, I don't remember how many I did, but I applied to different colleges and different majors at different colleges. So like I would apply to engineering at A&M, but then like at UT I'd apply for like biochemistry or something. But for you just applied for chemical engineering for both, right? So what kind of, I guess, spurred that? Did your parents do engineering? How did you know you wanted to go into chemical engineering?
So no one in my family is an engineer,
Oh.
and there's a whole kind of story I can go back on that and how I've reflected on that coming into college. But chemical engineering came about because I knew ever since I was a kid I wanted to be an engineer, just based on how much I loved math, science, and all that, typical things. And another very typical thing is, my chemistry teacher in high school was absolutely amazing. He was an Aggie as well. Shout out Mr. Crump. If you're listening to this, Mr. Crump, thank you so much. You made me. Yeah, he was just so full of awe and wonder for like what chemistry does for this world and what it can help us solve. And that's just what kind of I was like, oh, chemical engineering's a thing. I like chemistry. Let's do that. Turns out, chemical engineering is 99% engineering and 1% chemistry.
Oh.
And that's what I've learned as now a senior chemical engineer. But it definitely it's weird saying that because it's definitely more than 1%, but like the work you do, pencil to paper, it feels like it's 1%. But yeah, no, I've loved chemistry ever since those days in high school. I still am very in love with chemistry in my undergraduate research. I'm constantly watching like some of my favorite YouTubers are chemistry YouTubers who just do their basic experiments and everything. So I will forever love chemistry, and hopefully I can apply that to my career as an engineer.
For sure, yeah. You do undergraduate research then on campus? How long have you been doing that and what are you doing?
So I actually just got onto Dr. Green's team here in the chemical engineering department. I started early October, I think. Just went through the process of him kind of screening me, see if I was a good fit for the team, and here I am. And Dr. Green focuses on sort of mainly broadly this is the dispersion of nanomaterials. And kind of what that means is how he uses nanomaterials. And his primary use of them is doing things like 3D printing these nanomaterials and using applications such as radio frequency heating and other things like that to set these polymers. And you can use them in a lot of various different ways. One of the things I'm focusing on is using a 3D printer that sprays conductive graphitic ink onto a table. And that way we can kind of set a polymer on, whatever array of ink that we put. Then, you pass RF heating over that and it sets it. And the main goal or the big picture idea of this is trying to, upscale that process and make it very efficient, make it very repeatable. And I'm just kind of working on the basis of that. Not many printers exist where it's spraying ink rather than a polymer that sets. So I'm just kind of learning that technology right now, and it's pretty exciting. Dr. Green is a very inspiring prof, and his love for true science and determination to find these solutions is pretty inspiring. So I'm really lucky to have him as my prof and as my research advisor, because I know that's he's going to be a really good mentor to look up to. He actually has a TEDx talk
Really?
that I found out about a couple days ago, and I watched it immediately, and it's super good. It's about the academic achievement trap. I think that's valuable for any college student to listen to. So I encourage anyone to look up Micah Green, The Academic Achievement Trap on TEDx Talks. Super good story. It's about 20-minute video. It's really worth it. And you'll get to learn about Dr. Green. He's a super, super awesome guy.
Yeah, he sounds really cool. Did you hear about this opportunity then from like being in one of his classes or just like a mass email?
So I was lucky enough to hear it from one of my really good friends, Suchi. She's in his group already. And she was like, hey, there's a lot of seniors leaving, a lot of PhD students leaving. So he's trying to revamp the research group again, fill those spots. So everything's getting done. And one of the really interesting things about Dr. Green's research group as well is he tries to get students, undergrads, when they're really young in their degree, maybe, sophomore year at the earliest, And they stay with the group until they graduate, which I know some groups do that. I know a lot of other groups kind of do a semester or two semester stint, but he is very adamant about keeping a team and developing them and having them flesh out an idea for as long as they can, or even, be able to publish something, because I think that's where most of the development comes from, and he kind of sees that as well. And so yeah, that's kind of how I heard it through a friend, and that was really helpful, because he wasn't really outspoken about it. He just kind of lets people come to him if they're interested, which I think is more important to do, rather than just kind of throw it out there and be like, hey, come at me for a research opportunity.
Sure, yeah, that's like my one regret from college is, or like I have a lot, but I really wish I'd gotten into some sort of project group, whether it's like a research group or like some other organization that focuses on building something, just because like it's such a unique way to apply your engineering skills. I feel like in classes, the projects they give you are pretty narrow, but like with those, like I guess undergraduate research and other big groups, there's a lot more opportunity for growth because you're not just like doing it for a class, you're doing it because like you want to do it. So.
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't think, and I wouldn't say that you should feel too bad about missing out on something like that, because there's a lot of opportunities like these where undergrads like me go into a research group, and it actually ends up being nothing like they want to do, or the group is really unorganized, and it ends up being a very bad semester for them for trying to get that experience. I mean, no time is wasted. You learn a lot even during those rough times, but with events like these, it's very, or not events, but groups like these, it's very hit or miss, and I'm just very fortunate to be on a really good and efficient team.
Great. This is kind of changing topics a little bit, and I feel like we're in fish camp again when I ask this question, but like tell me about your family.
Tell me about my family. Awesome. Well, I think this is a very fitting question because I just got back into town after not seeing them for quite a while, I guess. It's been a busy semester, but my family is my family means a lot to me. I was just actually telling my mom today that I constantly tell others how much I've learned from my mom and my dad, and how much I very much appreciate them for everything that they've helped me learn to be. And that's something that I try to do, and I see almost every day in my actions and how I behave to other people, and how I behave to myself. I always see that I'm coming back and I'm relating it to something specific that my dad has taught me about, or talked to me, or taught me to do, or my mom, or even my sister. My family is just. They kind of love so silently sometimes too. They really put their head down, and work as hard as they can. And I don't know, it's just really inspiring, kind of how selfless they are. It really is a group of people that I always just harp back onto, and I'm super, super, just grateful for, because I know, so many different family situations, in every different household you come across. But I'm lucky to have one family that I can always count on, so super, super, super blessed to be around them.
Yeah. Is your sister older, younger, same age?
Yeah, so my sister's 24, and she is currently she actually just currently got into UTMB medical school. After some tumultuous times, because everything with COVID has gone crazy, but she's been working in a hospital, just got into med school for PT, or no, excuse me, PA school. She wants to be a physician's assistant. So I'm super proud of her about that. But yeah, she's older than me.
Yeah. So how has your guys' relationship evolved, I guess, since you were younger? Because I have a twin sister and we used to fight all the time. But as we got older, I mean, she goes to school in New York. We're still pretty, like, we've gotten a lot closer since. So how's like your relationship with your sister progressed?
I would say so, yeah. Pretty similar to y'all in the beginning, probably. She would kick me, punch me. It was kicking, pinching, and biting was the main thing. But that ended pretty quickly. I mean, like, I remember when I was a kid, she would be going on temper tantrums, and my parents would be like, "If you keep going at this, we're gonna move your TV into Blake's room." And I was always like, yes, like, please just keep going crazy. And that was always a lie. She would keep going crazy, and then I would never get the TV in my room. It was just their tactic of trying to, calm her down and everything. So a lot of lies like that. but eventually we broke through that, probably when I was like in fifth or sixth grade, and she was like going into high school. And we've been super chill ever since, and super close, and always, letting each other know stuff about each other that we wouldn't tell our parents. Typical close sibling things. You always got to have that sibling bond that your parents don't know about. So, but yeah, we've been there for each other through some times, and I think it's both helped us a lot in our growth and our understanding of each other. So yeah.
Awesome. If you had to assign like one adjective to each member of your family, what would each one be?
Let's see. I think for my dad, I would say diligent, just because of how much of a hard worker he is, and he's always focused, no matter what is going on in our lives or our family's lives. He's always on track, and the only thing he can think about is what he can sacrifice of his own to do for the betterment of our family. And it's without question, sometimes stuff happens in our family where it gets really hectic, and time is of the essence, and my dad will do anything. He'll drop the ball and head right where he needs to be, and that's exactly what I want to take away from him and be able to do for my family in the future. So diligent, focused, hardworking all the time. How would you describe someone with, strong integrity?
The first word that came to my mind was like virtuous,
Virtuous, yeah.
but I, yeah.
Virtuous is exactly what I would use to describe my sister then as well. She's very passionate about what she believes in, and how it relates to the people around her. And just when I came back today, we were talking about some really important things that are going on right now. And she cares so much about, what little things, what big things are constantly changing to affect people, specifically in our, American society. So that's always, one of the first things that's on her mind, and it really shows how appreciative and caring she is for everyone, and not just herself. So I really, really do believe she's a very virtuous person. And with my mom, I could definitely just say caring, because that's all I've ever gotten from her. Obviously more than that, but I think that's where I get a lot of, my innate want to be a good host, someone who can always be there for you and like bring you in no matter what's going on. I always want to be that person. I always want my house to be unlocked for anyone to come in for any problem they're having. And I can exactly attribute that to what my mom has shown me, and whoever, just strangers, friends growing up. So yeah.
Great. That's awesome to hear. Kind of switching to, I want to talk to you about like just your involvement with SEC. It's clearly been a big part of, I guess, both of our college experiences, but especially you. So kind of walk me through your journey in SEC, like what made you join it, what caught your eye about, even wanting to apply in the first place.
So what caught my eye? This is pretty interesting. I remember the day exactly. This is a very prominent memory over the past couple of years, but it was the second semester of freshman year. We were what is the dining hall that's under like the freshman dorms? I never lived over there, so I always forget
Common.
the name.
Was it the Commons or you're
Yeah,
talking
the
about?
Commons, the
Okay.
Commons. So, we'd go downstairs, go get some food there, got breakfast. I would usually go there, or rarely go there, freshman year to get some breakfast after chemistry class. And one day, I was with Kirsten Potter and James Swanson walked over as well. And she was like, "Oh, I know James from SEC. He's in it with me." And I was like, "Oh, what's the SEC? The Student Engineers Council." And I kind of noticed that they were wearing these Patagonias, and I was like, "Those are really cool. Like, how do y'all like y'all have Patagonias for your your merch of your organization? Like, I want to join." And they're like, "Oh my goodness, yes, like totally join, Blake. We would want you like an SEC so bad." And I was like, "For sure, okay." And then so I applied the next semester I could, and I got in first try. And then I quickly realized that the SEC was so much more than I had initially imagined. I was so focused on getting the Patagonia that, I didn't realize how important the work is and how big they do it at SEC. They do a lot for the College of Engineering, and it's super impressive what everyone does. So when I got in, I remember thinking to myself, like, man, how did I even just like get in the first time I applied? Like, that's so insane. And that's something that I kind of struggled with for my whole like first 2 semesters in SEC. I saw how much everybody was contributing, and I really didn't see it in myself that I was one that was able to contribute that much. I felt like I didn't have the confidence, the intellect, or just kind of the vitriol that everyone seemed to show when they were doing their executive announcements. Everyone on EC, everyone on EB was scaring me. And one of the most prominent memories as well, other than me seeing the Patagonia and wanting to get into SEC, was seeing Allison Godfrey and Philip Vineski, stand up for their executive announcement and be like, "Hey, we want to thank y'all for such an amazing career fair. Like, we couldn't have done it without y'all." And I saw them, and I was like, how did these two college students just run the nation's largest student-run career fair? Like, that, I can't comprehend that right now. I don't know how they do this. How do they have the time? How do they have the motivation? And I said to myself, I was like, how would that ever be me? Like, that will never be me. That's like literally insane. I'll just sit through SEC and just kind of go through the motions, have this on my resume or whatever. But when you're in an organization like the SEC and the people around you are who they are, then that just isn't possible, really. People really bring the best out of you in that organization. People like you, Vic, people like anyone else. The passion that everyone shows there is what really it pulls it out of you, whether you like it or not. And I slowly began seeing myself over the course of that first year in SEC, wanting to participate more, being a better student in school, being a better person to my friends outside of classes, outside of organizations. I was just being a more diligent, a more focused, and I guess a more compassionate person in general, just because of how much I saw it just oozing out of the Student Engineers Council. And so, once I kind of got into the groove of things and really took from the SEC what it was offering, I wanted to, participate more in my committee, and then eventually go to career fair as a coordinator. And that was one of the most amazing experiences. Working a career fair is so rewarding because you get to see what it does for everyone around you, all the students, all the companies. The impact is insane. You set up so many people with their future careers. You help get the job done for the recruiters. They're getting paid to do this. You better make it as painless and as enjoyable as you can. So the duty's really important, and it was just really amazing seeing that fulfilled. But even then, like, I remember the days of the career fair. I was like, it was like, the days before the career fair, I was like, I mean, still, I would never do career fair chair. That's like an insane, like, Philip Vineski, I remember someone asked him about it. And he's like, "Yeah, it's like a full-time job in college." And I was like, "I already have school. Why would I need a full-time job? And I have a part-time job already. So yeah, I'm definitely not doing it." But the days of career fair roll around, I am getting 30,000 steps a day on my Apple Watch. My feet are about to fall off. I'm sweating beads every day just because of walking back and forth, making sure everything's okay. But at the end of the all, at the end of it all, in the middle of it all, I just couldn't think, but like, I want to do this again, and I want to be like the leader of this. And someone asked me that day, they're like, Blake, you should be like the chair. Are you thinking about applying? And I was like, I thought about it for like 10 seconds. And I was just like, yeah, like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to do this. And I don't know. I just saw a big change in me that day. I was like, wow, I'm really thinking about doing this. But the biggest difference was I wasn't going to do it just to do it. That time around, I thought about it. And I was like, I've improved so much in school. I've done so much better with my friends and my relationships. I have, participated in the career fair now and have done it with no experience with what I thought I needed. It was just all my confidence and my abilities as a person in general. So if I did that, why not this? And that's kind of how I made that decision. And it just made it super easy. Once I finally had that self-confidence. So from that day forward, I was like, all right, I'm gonna apply for chair and hopefully I get it. And next thing you know, I get the position and I am now the career fair chair for the spring and fall 2020 career fairs.
Yeah, I actually want to get into that, but, because for those people who don't know, the spring career fair this year was in person, but the fall one was virtual. So obviously, it's two different career fairs happening. You can't really plan for it the same way. So I guess, what were some challenges you experienced going into your first career fair? And then I guess, what are some new challenges that came up because the career fair became virtual that like you didn't expect?
Right. So for the spring career fair, when it was my first ride as a career fair chair, which I guess for context, there is always two career fair chairs. One is a senior career fair chair, not by year, but as in they've done a career fair before. It's their second career fair, so they're the senior chair, and then the junior chair is the one just coming into the position. So that was my junior chair position was the spring 2020 fair. It was in person at Kyle Field. And I remember one of the biggest challenges being was even though I just helped run a career fair on the committee as the publications coordinator, coming in as a junior career fair chair made me realize that I had no idea what it meant to be a chair. And luckily, that's what James told me. He's like, "Hey, junior career fair chairs, they know nothing, and that's okay because like you never really get to see the behind the scenes of what we do in this leadership position." But the funnest thing about this process was, even though you know nothing, you had someone who's done it before at your side to kind of, run you through the motions and show you everything that's going on. And you really quickly learn about in a month or two exactly what you need to do to get the fair done. I think one of the most intimidating parts was, meeting with people at Kyle Field, at the people who do the food for A&M, which is Levy. Meeting with the hotel representatives, meeting with transportation executives here at A&M, meeting with all these very up high up people to kind of make business deals, get things done. I'd never been in a meeting where we were discussing high prices or things of that nature that are that serious. And so I remember just being in these meetings at first, just sitting, taking notes, and not saying a thing because I really didn't have anything to say. I was very new and had no really saying anything. But the cool thing was one meeting, even though I didn't really know what was going on, I kind of was like, "Well, I have an opinion on this. I think I should speak up," and I did. And we just kind of all talked about it, and it really boosted my confidence. Well, like. At first, I didn't really feel like I was at place in those meetings, but it really showed that I did have a place and that what I say is valid and can be taken into consideration. So those were probably like the funnest things is speaking at these very important meetings and because it's nothing that you really have gotten to do before and just any or other organizational role or team leader role especially in college. So that was one of the first challenges I kind of had to overcome. But other than that, it's for an in-person fair when we've done it so many times and the routine is, you know, meticulously laid out in our manuals. Obviously, there's a bunch of, you know, unexpected challenges that come up. This happens at all fairs. And those I can't really harp on just because they're so specific to a fair. It was just kind of a cakewalk. Obviously, it took a lot of my time, but if you're confident enough, you know, any typical challenges are those are givens. So it really was just a normal, amazing, and smooth experience, regardless of how stressful and actually time-consuming it was.
And then for the this past fall, you kind of became the senior career fair chair while you got a new junior chair who was Kyle Beck. What was that like, kind of being the leader of something that you had done before, but like it looked way different now, so you didn't really have anything laid out?
Yeah, so there's two things. One, when you're coming into that role as the senior chair, now you're kind of like the top dog and have to kind of really set a precedent of how you're going to be running a team of, you know, your other co-chair, your vice president, and your 14 or so coordinators. So that's one of the big challenges is just like, how am I going to be this leader that kind of everyone looks up to and looks for guidance? It's the first time I've ever kind of had a big responsibility like that in my life. So that was definitely one of the biggest things I was thinking about. And then second, when we got the news from the engineering department that all engineering events were going to be virtual up until the end of the year, I was like, well, here we go. The fair is now virtual. So let's get to it. And, you know, our first couple of weeks were just spent looking, you know, at venue or not venues because that was off limits, but at different technologies, websites, programs that were built for events like these. And so that was one of the struggles. But the main thing, the most specific thing that I could really take away from this in terms of struggles was recognizing the distinct gap in knowledge. Or intuitive knowledge from one generation to the other. So what I'm saying by that is us as college students, our age group has kind of grown up with the technology that is the internet, that is our smartphones, that are these portable computers. We have grown up with this technology and we have learned it ever since we were like 8, 9, 10, 11. And so it's just been molded into our brains on how stuff like this will work when we, so transitioning an in-person event to a completely virtual one doesn't seem too much like a challenge for our age group. And it really didn't prove so. Days of the fair, you know, questions about the functionalities and everything were very limited from students. It was more just organizational stuff, if any. But the big divide, the big gap, and where I got most of my work done this fair virtually was getting the recruiters, the company representatives who are anywhere from just out of college to, you know, over 60 years old and deep into their company and deep into their business to learn how to transition to a virtual environment. Victor, I answered so many emails. So many emails. I got so many phone calls. It was absolutely insane. I have never been so bombarded with that amount of communication in my life. And that was a truly, truly humbling experience. I had to answer at least, it was anywhere from 50 to 100 emails a day. And then I think the biggest thing that would get into my in my way would be the phone calls because you had no idea when a phone call was going to last 30 seconds or 30 minutes. And that constantly cutting into your schedule, being a student and also trying to get other career fair responsibilities done, that was very tasking on me mentally because I know I had to get so much more done, but there was sometimes it was just so hard and frustrating for me to understand why this person couldn't see how they could register as a recruiter for their company or see where to put their company information. But that's just a difference from our generations of what we've grown up with. You know, they're not on their phones all the time or using computer programs. People are doing what they do, what they know. And so it was, I really had to build an understanding of that over time as we were getting closer to the fair, because as we got closer to the fair, more emails each day, and
Yeah.
we started getting to like 100, 115 each day. I would have to set aside like 2 or 3 hours to, you know, Olympian style type these out. If I wasn't laser focused, if there wasn't a cup of coffee right next to me, and I wasn't staying buzzed, I was not getting through these emails in about 2 to 3 hours. It was going to be a long journey. That was the biggest thing I learned, really. The biggest challenge was seeing the just that innate gap, that innate difference in the information, the knowledge that we have about technologies like these. And overall, I guess in a greater sense, patience. Patience was the biggest thing because the workload actually was kind of lessened a lot technically, the physical workload. You know, going to a virtual event, that just makes sense. But this was such a huge mental challenge and a challenge on me and Kyle's patience, to kind of deal with a whole new set of directions and a whole new set of questions. So that was one of the biggest challenges. And I guess one of the final things I want to say too is what weighed on me and Kyle heavy as well was kind of reassigning and reinventing how our team would be set up, because obviously when we have a team of 14 coordinators and we have positions for them set up initially for an in-person fair, that drastically changes when we have it go to a virtual event. One of the biggest things that I love about being a chair is leading that team of coordinators and watching them develop from people who maybe initially thought they weren't good enough or talented enough to lead an event such like this, to let their potential finally come out and show that yes, you are a young leader, you are a young, intelligent person who can take charge and put together one single project that'll affect this event in such a large way. That's one of my favorite things about the career fair, but repositioning that, even having to kind of lessen the degree of work that one coordinator position was doing, and even altogether, some coordinator positions were made obsolete because things like the company showcase and the welcome social were not a thing anymore. The company showcase was turned into a virtual company showcase. We almost did it to it, but things like the welcome social, it was just not a thing anymore. So our team had to be kind of repositioned for that, and I wish the coordinators got to work more and participate more in the career fair. I think I could have done a better job of that and staying connected and making sure that they got everything out of this virtual career fair. So that's also one of the just biggest challenges that I remember about that career fair.
Okay. Yeah, I was, you kind of touched on it. I wanted to ask you what's something you wish you could have done differently, but not like, maybe it's not specific to the career fair. Maybe it's like how you handled all the stress and how you were able to manage your time. So, kind of your thoughts.
Okay. So one of the things mine first of something I wanted to do differently was exactly what I was kind of just talking about with reallocating the responsibilities for the coordinator positions. As I was in a position that I knew about, it was like, more graphic design, marketing. And I was like, I am not the type of person, but I put my head down, I did the work, and it proved to be amazing. It helped me boost my confidence and show that I could kind of put my head to whatever I wanted to do. So I didn't want people to miss out on that, but in the midst of trying to transition this, it got a little hectic. And sometimes I felt like I wasn't the coordinators enough or focusing on their positions enough to make sure that they got what they should be getting out of this career fair, especially since they applied for it, interviewed for it, and ultimately deserved it. So I really wish I went back and kind of focused on them a lot more and differently. But you know, that's in the past, and I'll definitely be learning from that, and hopefully, you know, leadership positions that I come by in the future, because that's, you know, that's definitely something I want to return to. Leading a team is like no other experience, and super, super fun, super satisfying, and just great for everyone involved.
Yeah. How do you think Blake, before he was a career fair chair, is different from the Blake who you are today?
So before I went to career fair chair, Blake was not burnt out. No, I'm just kidding. Now, before Blake went to chair, I think bef I knew what time management was before I was chair, but I didn't know what true time management was. I really was still able to have fun. I was still able to hang out with friends. I was still able to get in a great amount of studying that kept my grades up. I was still able to do everything that I wanted to do, but at a much tighter schedule, a much more focused schedule. And what even made me realize was when you make a tighter schedule into it, you actually have free time than you ever even thought before that I took on the position like the chair. So there's definitely levels to it. There's degrees to time management and kind of getting yourself into situations like these. So before chair, I was good at time management, but after chair, absolutely amazing at it. Obviously, I've been a little bit more lax about that, kind of as my semester being done as chair, like I'm kind of giving myself a break. I really want to focus on getting back into that groove again that I was during chair, because it had me being a much better student, a much more focused human, being better with my health, all that kind of stuff. So I really want to get back into that same groove, even though I'm not a chair anymore. You know, being very attentive to what I'm doing with my time is something I really want to pay attention to now.
I like that. Yeah, I feel like obviously, like I've never been a career fair chair, but I've seen the work that you guys do. I've seen like the past career fair chairs talk about it. Everyone always talks about, you know, it's probably one of the most rigorous positions you could have, like not just in SEC, but honestly, like in college. So I think you did a really good job with it. This is not related to SEC anymore, but what is a dream that you have yet to achieve?
Okay, so yeah, one of the main goals that I've always had throughout my life was wanting to, you know, be with family, you know, with my partner and with my future children, to not only support them, but to, you know, foster an environment with them where I can share my experiences and they can learn from that to possibly go out and serve others and help others grow, just as like those have done around me. And hopefully I can learn from my family as too. That's just kind of my main goal. Wanting to just develop such a good environment for wanting to help others. But you know, that'll obviously take some time. So I guess when I focus in a little bit more, one of the things that I want to do that I have not achieved yet is to really focus a larger portion of my time to serving others in my everyday life. I think I achieved that goal a little bit this semester, but that's just one step in for many to come. So just this semester, I joined Build, TAMU Build, if you've ever heard of it, Vic. But if you have not heard of it, it's an organization where we turn a bunch of Aggie volunteers turn shipping containers into medical clinics that'll be sent around the world, or even in this case, this year. Are you know sent to here in Bryan College Station area for the REACH project to be used as educational clinics, medical clinics, and whatnot. And the reason I kind of did this is I've been so focused on my professional development in organizations like SEC that I saw something missing after career fair, and that was you know me setting my time aside for something that isn't about me. And that's about helping others grow, pushing others forward, and helping provide something for others. And that's what I want to do with Build. So that's one small step, but I think my bigger step is to really make that a true priority for, like, half of my life. Half of my life should be moving forward. And I'll get this ratio correct, because I don't think it'll be half and half. There will be the golden ratio. I'll soon figure out, but a good portion of my life, I want to, always be focusing on how I'm going to move forward with my career, but also how I can set aside my free time to not be selfish towards myself and just kind of, sit down and be lazy, but portion some of that time to how can I help my community? How can I help others? How can I help my friends? How can I help anyone other than me? Because that's really what it's all about at the end of the day. So that's one of the goals I've yet to accomplish, but I think I made a little step and I want to get closer each and every day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I am the same way. I did like some service organizations in the past, but I think like this summer and like actually seeing like there's actually other people out there who need help and they're not as fortunate as like you and I are. Like I want to actually like make a difference and help them out. And I think this summer was when I realized, I don't know where my career is going to go, but I do know eventually like I would love to end up with any sort of nonprofit helping out with any sort of cause, because like it's so rewarding like helping somebody and knowing that like you played a small hand in that and making them feel better.
One of the best things to think about is how it's a weird thing that I've been thinking about, like when you're going out and giving your time to help other people to volunteer, the beautiful thing about it is it's not like your homework or your classwork or your project work where once you get there, it's just kind of like you finish that goal and then you set it aside. When you're helping people, there's no end. I think the ideal thing is to think about, we want to go out, help the community, and then, oh, everybody's happy, everybody's perfect, all problems are solved. That'll never be the case, unfortunately, but I think it only makes sense that when we're going out to sacrifice our time for others, that there is no goal that we can reach. We can only just continue pushing forward. And that'll mean, the world to anyone that it is affecting. So I think that's one of the really exciting things about devoting our time for others is that there's always a job to be done. And you always have something to look forward to keep progressing towards. So I think that kind of, harps on what you were just saying.
Yeah, and honestly, like you said it like best. I heard a quote from someone like in my senior year of high school that said, "You will never know like the true extent of your influence." And like service can look like a bunch of different things. It could be like literally helping somebody out physically, or it could like just be there. Like you could just talk to them for like 5 minutes. But you like any act of kindness, like no matter how small, goes a long way. Like I live by that. Huge believer in it. Like completely agree with this whole like service and helping other people out, 'cause like it's so rewarding and like for both sides, I feel. I guess we've talked a lot about, engineering and SCC and all this, but what are some of your like hobbies or passions outside of school?
So one of the first things I can think of is I am a huge collector when it comes to just about anything. One of the things that I love collecting right now is vinyl records. I recently got a turntable a couple months ago, and I've had vinyls even before it. I just wanted to collect them, even had a turntable or anything yet. But I love music so much. I love the fact that I can have a physical representation of music right in front of me, because I feel like that's the best way I can appreciate it. And I am just a super big geek about the technology that you can do to improve your setup for listening to vinyl records. And that's just one thing that I love doing. Collecting is a very broad thing for me. At the end of high school, I had a Rubik's Cube collection. I still have it. It's under my
Wow.
bed. It's about like 40 to 50 puzzles is what they are. The community doesn't like when you just call all of them Rubik's Cubes. They're all called puzzles, because they all come in different shapes and sizes to get really difficult. I knew how to solve them all at one point. I do not remember how to now. And then something that I want to get into, but I can't because the amount of money is there's actually a huge Pokemon card craze right now. It's just
Right.
blowing up that Pokemon cards are getting like the market is going insane. Like first edition Charizards are selling for $150,000 to $200,000. And so I love watching videos of people opening Pokemon cards, anything collecting. I love that kind of stuff. And that might not be good for my wallet if I end up like really going towards collecting anything. But it's just kind of cool sometimes. And I think there's plenty of ways that you can collect items or mementos without breaking the bank at all. So that's really cool. But that's one of the things. Another thing is it's also related to music too. I really love music. Is I use a digital audio workstation to kind of like make music that I like. I'll make anything that I just really feel in the moment. I've made like just because people like mention it to me. I've made Billie Eilish like type beats. I'm really into like ambient and neo psych like ambient genres. And so I kind of make that stuff in my DAW. I love hip hop and I love rap. And I make a lot of just like, very generic trap beats in there. I love, messing with that. And I've spent around like 4 or 5 years in it and I've gotten so much better. I just do it for fun. I just, do it so I can like listen to what I've created because I just kind of take from what I hear from, all these artists and kind of do my own little spin on it. And it's just really fun to do in my free time. If a class just ends or gets out, I'll open up FL Studio and I'll just make something. Even though I can't play piano or any instrument, I've learned some music theory to kind of make it better. But I think my biggest next goal here, this goes back to a question you asked, is a goal that I have yet to accomplish. I want to learn how to play the piano so bad, especially after watching you play. That was amazing. That was amazing.
Thanks.
But I kind of express my emotions a lot in the music I make in that digital audio workstation. So I feel like it would be such a freeing experience for me to learn an instrument like the piano because it's my favorite instrument. Even though I do not know how to play it, I feel like I could really express a lot of how I feel just by playing it whenever I'd like. So I have not committed any time really to learning it, just because I know it'd be such a big time commitment for me. But one day I really do want to settle down and try to do my best on learning how to play the piano, even if it's just a little bit.
Yeah, no, I would love to help you out with that. I was really lucky. Like, parents forced me when I was younger and I hated it, but now, like, obviously I'm really happy I know. But piano's really cool 'cause you can like you control so much. You control the bass, you control the melody. And if you really know like your music theory, even if it's like a basic amount of music theory, you could honestly just play the same chords over again, but just put them in different orders and it just sounds like something new.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And no, I think back about that. I'm like, I'm gonna after this podcast, I'm gonna tell my parents like, why didn't you force me to learn that? I probably would have complained as a kid, but I would be looking back right now and I'd be so happy that y'all did. But I feel like everybody says that though, so yeah.
Who knows? Who really knows? So you mentioned collecting like records. Do you like give me your top three like
Oh.
that you
This is
love?
a great topic of discussion. All right, so I encourage anyone to not be scared to listen to these. These are very interesting records. I love all music genres. I used to not like a few. Now my mind is open to everything. Anywhere from melodic ambience to deep math rock or metal rock or death rock or prog rock or anything aggressive that seems kind of scary. I love the whole gambit. I love the whole, the whole, what's the word for it?
Like
The whole
spectrum.
spectrum. Exactly. I love it all. And so I think my biggest thing with music is I love hearing stuff that I've never heard before, but it still strikes you as, wow, this is so interesting. I want to listen to this again. And so one of those things is kind of hypnagogic. It's a very interesting name. It's kind of a combination of neo-psych and hypnagogic pop. And it's been popularized and kind of perfected by this man. His name is One Ho Trix Point Never. It's a very interesting name. I actually just ordered his vinyl and it just shipped 2 days ago. I already have one of his. It's called R Plus Seven. It's kind of his magnum opus. But it's kind of a variation of typical ambience music. Typical ambience music is very calming and kind of just uses very generic sounds and very generic different variations. But this neo-psych kind of twist that One Ho Trix Point Never puts on it makes it very otherworldly. It makes it very intimidating, confusing, exciting at the same time. And almost at some points, even though there's no words, it feels like the music is speaking to you. And it really harps on a lot of noises that we hear in our daily lives and kind of jumbles it up to put it into a form where it actually sounds like that sound is an instrument that's existed forever. So one of the things that I was actually just listening to today is from his new album. It's like a self-titled, but it's called Magic 100 Point Never. That's the one I was just listening to today. There's a song called I think the Trash Stratum, and it's doing these in the middle after this chaotic intro. There's these arpeggiating noises that are like a combination of a lot of very common phone notification noises. And it's not off-settling at all. Like you're not like, oh, that's like, it's just like a bunch of iPhone noises in the middle of it. It sounds like it's integrated into this so perfectly. And just how creative people can get in kind of making these songs and sounds that are super shocking and super overbearing at sometimes. When I first heard this music, I was very confused. And very kind of off put, but I was intrigued, so I returned to it and I was like, wow, I'm not embarrassed to say I like this. I love this stuff. That was a really drawn out first answer to kind of what you asked, but some of my top things to listen to right now, my top vinyls are my One Ho Trix Point Never vinyls. I have an R Plus 7 one, and I have the Magic One Ho Trix Point Never coming in from the UK in about 5 days. So I'm really excited to get that one in. Let's see the next vinyl. One of my favorite vinyls of 2019 is I recommend everyone listen to this. I love soul and I love kind of the harp on 70s soul that this album does. It's called American Wake Up Call by Duran Jones and The Indicators. Wait, and The Indicators? Let me double check. I do not want to get that wrong. Durand. Jones and the Indications, Durand Jones and the Indications. The album is called American Love Call, and it is absolutely amazing all the way through. It just came out in 2019, but it feels like it came out in the 1970s. The soul is portrayed so well. The two vocalists on there do an absolute amazing job, and I really recommend that anyone listen to. This is my favorite song. How Can I Be Sure? It's like the second to last song. It's an amazing album. And then lastly, for three, I really can't put one record in that category, but I love like my biggest geeking out genre of music is hip hop and rap. I have a lot of hip hop and rap records because I just love the lore. I love the culture behind it. I'll pick one that I really like in my collection. Let's see. You know what? No, I just thought of another vinyl that's going in my number three spot.
There you go.
And you know what it is? It is Kacey Musgraves' Golden Hour.
I love that album so much.
Dude, when I got that on vinyl, I was like, and there's some vinyls where you play and like you're like, no, I need to listen to something different today. I always play the custom Kacey Musgraves one, and the next day I'm like, no, I have to play something different. But then I just end up going back to it. It's so good, and just having it in vinyl form is amazing. So that's what I would put as number three right now in top finals. But the wrap ones can go in a different category. I just love collecting. I have a bunch of different wrap ones, and I just have about any vinyl, any genre, I would love to hear. So.
That's awesome. Have you ever heard of this website called Obscurify? I'm very interested to see what your stats are, because I don't. You're probably one of the first. Yeah, you are the first person I know that listed those particular bands besides Kacey Musgraves. But I'd love to see how obscure your music is compared to the U.S. average.
Yeah, I don't think it'd be too crazy, because I kind of find obscure people and then I just kind of lock in on them. I don't explore like crazy, and just kind of find every person that's underground in that genre. But I do find anything that's new and interesting that I haven't heard of before more interesting than, say, typical radio music. And that's not the typical, hipster, they're underground, they're not like. I genuinely just think it's interesting to hear something that is. I think what my point with this is like I really don't find it that great when people are like, oh, that just sounds like weird or like gross and like they're that person's weird because of that. Like if it's off-putting, I'm gonna give it a try. And if it's really interesting in some sort of way that's inexplicable at first, I think that's pretty amazing. So.
Yeah, no, for sure. I understand that though, when some people are like, they kind of just dismiss entire genre because they're just not used to it. I remember I'll bring up EDM to some people and they have just like Skrillex in their head and that's it. And they're like, I don't like EDM because
Yeah,
of them,
exactly.
right?
EDM is so far-reaching. Like, yeah, if they do have that one memory of Skrillex in their head, then I can see why it'd be off-putting. But, no, yeah, no, exactly.
Has any of this music you grew to love in college, or is this something that you've always been super passionate about, like all these different genres?
A lot of this has grown in college because I've spent a lot more time. I think it all started with studying. The amount of time I was studying, I started putting on. I can't study with music. I never studied with music in high school. I started studying with music in college, but I tried with words at first, and I cannot focus at all. My brain goes scatterbrained when there's words. So I started like listening to these ambient songs, and then I found people like Tim Hecker, who is just huge in ambience music. I have a bunch of his vinyls too, and 100.0 Never, 2814, Home is a really. If you like EDM, I would. Do you know Home?
I think I know how. Oh wait, like the EDM version? Or no, this EDM.
No, this is an artist Home.
Oh, the artist. No, I don't know.
I really recommend you search up Home. He's more EDM, but he kind of does some more ambient tracks as well. But kind of all this, these tracks that didn't have words in them, were kind of striking to me at first. But then some really stuck out, and like the worlds they kind of transport me to. That's what just kind of got me hooked. I'd be in Zachary just hours at a time, and these interesting pieces of music would just keep me going. And that's where I just kind of started branching out to any different genre. So.
Love that. Yeah. EDM was acquired taste for me in college, so I understand. I can't study with, I would usually study to pop music, but I'd try to sing along and it wouldn't work out. Oh man. I guess, we're nearing the end of this, but I had a couple more questions I wanted to ask you. And the first one is, if you had to, I guess, divide your personality into a pie chart, or divide yourself into a pie chart, what would the percentages be and what would the categories be?
Okay. Victor coming through with the amazing questions tonight.
I got this from someone else, but I was like, this is a really good question
Credit
I have to ask.
where credit's due. Let's see. All right. So the first thing I would think about, I would say 33.3% of the pie charts is I am a people pleaser. No. I'm going 40% on this one. people pleaser slash I love giving what I have to others in order to make them happy. I actually had a big discussion with about this topic with some friends, and I didn't realize how different people were on this topic. Like maybe they only want to make sure that they give to their kinfolk. Some people want to give to anyone that they see they would like to give to. And some would like to keep to themselves. I very much like having my doors always open. If I have something and someone seems like they want it, or if they don't even ask for it at all, I'll even offer. Like I always just want to share what I have with others, and that's something that's kind of a big thing with my life. So I love sharing what's mine is yours, and I think that's defines me a lot. 30% of me. So the next 30% is avoiding all drama. This one's interesting, I think, because I think drama has always been something like, and what I mean by drama is kind of unnecessary conflicts with people, almost in a petty sense. I just think that's a waste of all of our times. Obviously there's a lot more serious personal conflicts between two people, and those are a lot different, but things that you can just push aside. You got to step back and ask yourself, is what is this conflict in my life doing? If it's just like holding me back, do I keep this person in my life, just get over it, work it out with them, or do I just keep this person out of my life? And just forget about that so I can focus on my life. I think whenever stuff like that comes up, you need to kind of do one of those two things, and just keep moving forward if it's not that serious. But that's something I kind of hold on to a lot, is kind of avoiding any drama like that so we can focus on the important things and not these tiny little things that are holding us back.
Right.
And that extends to everything, from us just being good to each other to us contributing to society as a greater whole, politically, in our system. So stuff like that. 20%. So I'll do 40, 30, 20, and 10. 20%, I will say I just want to, have a good time. I want to be like, I want it to be like a movie that night, spending my time with, my closest friends and just making sure that everyone is having the best time that they can. And kind of forgetting, always escaping this world. Yeah, this is how I'd put it. This 20% of me is always wanting to escape from the reality that I've kind of placed myself in. This one I can attribute to me being a Pisces. I don't really dig into zodiac signs, but like sometimes I attribute some of my personality to kind of what sign I am. But I really love to escape reality sometimes, and I think it's important for all of us to do that. And I really strive to do that with myself, with my friends sometimes. So yeah, that's 20%, and then 10% is I'm a freaking goober. And I can act so awkward and weird, but I've embraced awkwardness. I really do live by the fact that it's only awkward if you make it awkward. If you say something and other people think it's awkward, I just don't even think it's awkward anymore. It's just like, you know what? I said it, or they did something weird, but I'm not gonna think it's weird. Let's just live our lives and just kind of laugh it off. I think we can all be goofballs and just kind of not worry too much about what other people think about us, and just live how we are.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I love how I love this question just because, especially you, I don't think you got like us as individuals usually ask ourselves like, who am I? Or like, what makes like myself up? Like we
True.
think we know, but like putting it into language is so difficult,
Very, very difficult. That was a tough one to think through. And like I feel like there's so many pieces of the pie that I'm forgetting, but I answered what I answered.
What has been your biggest surprise I guess since, let's say like since June.
I don't know. Everything's been pretty typical this semester. I guess the biggest thing was, getting in a relationship, having a girlfriend. That kind of happened this semester, and it kind of came out of nowhere. It really is when you never expect it. But that is another thing that kind of changes how you operate your time. Because you're, hanging out a lot, even while you're trying to do schoolwork and have a part-time job, do research work, do career fair, and all that. So it's just in the most unoffensive way. It is another part of your schedule that you kind of have to figure out. Even it's a different sense because it's a person you're focusing your time on, and shouldn't kind of be viewed as another part of your schedule. But when you are busy, you kind of have to think of it that way sometimes. So that's been the biggest surprise. Just, I was never really expecting it. But things like that happen. And the great thing is it's been such a beneficial addition to my life right now. So that's been super great.
That's awesome. That is a pretty big surprise, especially if you weren't looking, like if it just happened. So very happy for you. Hope it goes well.
Thank you, sir.
Of course. And I guess the final thing is, if you could tell yourself something and like tell your future self something, what would it be?
This one, I love this question because I do have an answer that I've been trying to tell myself. I've been reminding myself of this, every couple of months now is like, do not worry about the path that you're taking. And do not compare that path to other people's paths. That's one of the biggest things I've learned coming into college, and I think that will apply to my life till my end. One of my biggest struggles has been comparing how I go through my degree, how I go through my classes, how I go through my work with other people and how they're doing it. And when I think people are going to be successful because I see how smart and how confident and how charismatic they are, I think I need to do exactly that to get where I want to be. But there's two things. One, where I want to be is maybe not necessarily where they're going to be. And two, my path is exactly how it's going to be. It can never be like anyone else's. So I just need to focus on what I'm going to do, succeed in that path, and everything's going to work out just fine. And that is what I want to just keep telling myself in the future. Like, always remember that and you'll be okay. Oh, and failure is not an option. It's so simple, but this is something I've been telling myself in college as well. It works for me. When I'm like kind of deep in the trenches in a semester, and I think I'm gonna fail everything. That's never really the case, but sometimes it just feels like it is. Sometimes you just have those feelings. But when I sit back and think, like, is failure really an option? Am I just going to sit back and let myself get absolutely railed by all these classes? No, there's no way. Am I going to let myself slip away from my friends because I'm, getting saddened by how much stress is piling on from school, from wanting to get a job? No, like I need to keep pushing like I've been pushing so many days before. So failure is not an option as well.
Yeah, great takeaways, especially like honestly, like super applicable to college, also super applicable to anywhere else in life. So, love that. All right, well, that brings us to the end. Blake, thank you very much for, working through the difficulties we had recording remotely. Really appreciate your patience. So, thank you so much for coming on this again.
Yeah, no problem, Vic. I thank you for having me. I knew this was going to be a blast once I got on, so I was really looking forward to it, and I really enjoyed my time. And hopefully everyone enjoyed listening.
For sure, yeah. Well, I will see you guys on the next one. You guys have a happy Thanksgiving. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.